It's been 7 years now since America hit the accelerator on corn-based ethanol fuels. Homegrown corn became the centerpiece of a push to find an alternative to foreign oil. President Bush signed the expansion of the Renewable Fuel Standard, RFS, in 2007, promising it would make us stronger, cleaner, and more secure. But as is so often the case, something that offers great promise on one hand takes its toll on the other hand. So the view of corn-based ethanol very much depends upon which side of the fence you're standing on. Proponents, including the Michigan Corn Growers Association, say corn-based ethanol is a greener source of fuel, the future of our energy. And many farmers in Michigan and across the Corn Belt rushed to convert pasture and conservation land for corn, grateful for the chance to earn a better living thanks to this new market for their crop. But critics worry about environmental damage, destroyed habitat, increased fertilizer use threatening water supplies, and global warming as that converted land is plowed and releases carbon dioxide that had been locked into the soil. Well, now we hear the Obama administration has proposed reducing the amount of ethanol that must be blended into our gasoline supply. Farmers are protesting. Ethanol advocates worry it's a step backward for alternative energy. And they're accusing Big Oil and its lobbyists of slinging misinformation and myths about corn-based ethanol. Let's take a closer look at the future of ethanol and what our renewable energy future might look like. Joining us now is Bruce Dale, a professor of chemical engineering and former chair of the Department of Chemical Engineering and Materials Science at Michigan State University. And his MSU bio notes, and let me quote here, in plain terms, Professor Dale is trying to figure out what we will do to provide environmentally sustainable fuels and chemical products for our society once the age of petroleum winds to its inevitable end sometime in this century. Professor, you say you hope this age of petroleum ends with a whimper and not a bang. What do you mean by that?
Well, of course, it's an allusion to poetry there. But the idea is the whimper is that it'll go out quietly instead of with a bang, which it could happen. In other words, resource wars or just generally environmental and social disruption because we've been so reliant on petroleum for so long.
And I think disruption probably is a modest look at what might happen just based on what we've seen when gasoline prices rocket upwards. Imagine, it's impossible to imagine having this age end.
Well, we've known nothing else, but we better accustom ourselves to something else because conventional or cheap oil supply has clearly peaked. And now any additional oil that we get is going to be from very dirty sources like the tar sands or dangerous sources like the ultra-deep water. We're in a pickle.
Can you help us with this differing of views over corn-based ethanol? Because, you know, we hear it has made life better for America's corn farmers. It gives us an alternative to petroleum and foreign petroleum. And then we hear about environmental damage and questions whether ethanol is harmful to engines and we're converting food into fuel. Where do you believe the truth lies about corn-based ethanol?
Well, you have to separate two issues here. One is the corn itself, and the other is the ethanol as a fuel. I don't think there's any doubt at all but what corn-based ethanol has been good for America's farmers. It's increased their markets, increased the price of corn. It's reduced the amount of government subsidies that you and I are paying to that we've always paid or paid in the past to keep corn low-priced. On the other hand, corn production has some environmental drawbacks. It simply does. And I think that what we see with the change in the RFS is corn-based ethanol has kind of reached the limits of its political support. Now, ethanol as a fuel is another issue. Ethanol is a very fine fuel, and if we're smart about how we use ethanol, if we were smart about it, we'd be probably blending ethanol in blends around 30% with gasoline, where the mileage penalty disappears and you get the value of ethanol's high octane, and it's a much cleaner way of providing octane, less harmful than we're currently doing with aromatics like benzene, a known carcinogen.
So I know with your research you have proven that you don't need to make ethanol with only corn. Can you talk about some of the alternative sources?
Sure. A lot of the attention in the RFS, of course, has been focused around corn-based ethanol. Mm-hmm. But the United States actually committed itself by that law to produce even larger volumes over a longer period of time, larger volumes of ethanol from cellulosic materials. These are grasses, straws, wood chips, parts of municipal solid waste. They're not part of the food supply, but they're also quite a bit more difficult and therefore currently more expensive to produce. And so the idea was to establish a market for them that would help drive the industry to scale so that the prices could come down, the technology could get established. And if we develop those fuels, those cellulosic fuels correctly, then we can have very large volumes of fuel and also environmental improvements. Again, done right, done well,
You'd
get very large environmental improvements.
Is the reason this has not caught on, the cellulosic source, because of the oil lobby or the farm lobby or both?
It's a complicated story, so I'll just try to give you the outlines. We hit what we call the blend wall. This isn't a technical limit, but it's a policy limit of how much ethanol we'd allow to be blended in our gasoline supply at about 10% by volume. We already produce enough corn-based ethanol to hit that target, so there really was literally no room for ethanol from cellulosic ethanol. And then with the reduction in the amount of corn ethanol in the RFS2, the situation's gotten even murkier. But ethanol by itself is a very fine fuel, and we should be making, I think, intelligent use of its fuel properties in our engines.
Is there the political interest? Are there policymakers in Washington who are on board with this push towards cellulosic ethanol?
Yes, I think that there's still very strong support. And in fact, I have a number of friends in the environmental community. They have very strong support for ethanol made or any other biofuel, but ethanol is the one that we know how to make in the shorter term. I'm talking by next 5 to 10 years. Ethanol is a fuel we know how to make, and there's a lot of support for it made from these grasses and straws and wood chips and so forth. What there is not support for, though, and I think, again, we saw this, is to further expand the amount of corn-based ethanol. I know that's a bitter pill for my friends in the corn ethanol industry to take, but I think this shows pretty clearly that we've reached kind of the high water mark of what's going to be publicly supportable in terms of corn ethanol.
I'm speaking with Bruce Dale, who's a professor of chemical engineering at Michigan State University, and you work with the University of Wisconsin, and MSU has teamed together to form the Great Lakes Bioenergy Center. So what are some of the promising directions that research is going at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Center?
Well, to back up just a moment, this center was started its operation about 6 years ago, and it's receiving approximately $135 million over 10 years to develop sustainable cellulosic biofuels, ethanol one of them, but we have others on our plate. I, director, helped lead one of the research areas there, but the whole effort of the Great Lakes Bioenergy is to try to develop sustainable cellulosic biofuels. And so we have combined efforts on environmental research, on deconstruction, that's breaking plant material down into sugars, on fermentation and on basic plant science to try to improve the processing properties and the sustainability of the plant material.
When I think about what you're saying with cellulosic ethanol, and you say there's even some other possible things on kind of in the pipeline, it is certainly clear that as a society we've always had to pay a cost for any source of fuel, whether we're shoveling horse droppings or carbon emissions and global warming, and then we see Fukushima and Chernobyl and now the environmental concerns about the corn-based ethanol. So do you think cellulosic ethanol could give us the most energy at the lowest cost?
I don't think we will ever have anything again, to approach $20 or $10 a barrel oil in terms of lowest cost. That was, you know, that oil supply was built up over hundreds of millions of years, and we used it up in 100 years. Okay,
wow.
So no, that won't happen. Can we get enough sustainable produce to live decently? I think so. I think we can, but it won't be the energy extravaganza that we've enjoyed over the last 100 years. I just don't see any combination of energy sources that's going to allow us to do that, what we had with oil.
What are your thoughts, and when you think about your mission and what you do, Bruce, how do you want to help make sure that this country is still beautiful and it's still productive and that there is energy and fuel for our grandchildren?
Well, my own personal efforts and are largely funded by Great Lakes Bioenergy, but also other support that we've received, notably from the folks at GM. We're trying to figure out how to design sustainable bioenergy systems. We know what we need to do, but now we need to, I'm thinking of as an engineer here, where you think about a whole system and you try to imagine the properties that you want it to have and then what kind of targets for performance. And we're working right now to try to establish what a sustainable cellulosic biofuel system would look like. How would it treat land? How would it treat water? How would it treat air? How would it treat biodiversity? And establish targets, design targets to do that. So that's enough to keep me busy for another 20 years.
And as you say, it feels, I can tell from what you say, it feels as though the clock is ticking on the petroleum party we've been having.
Production of conventional cheap oil peaked in 2005, and any increase that we've had in quote-unquote oil since then has been from places like the tar sands or like our own drilling at tight shale formations. Those are much more expensive economically, and they have the potential to be a lot more environmentally destructive. So, the clock is ticking on us.
Bruce Dale, professor of chemical engineering at Michigan State University and also with the Great Lakes Bioenergy Center. Thank you so much for talking with us today on Stateside, Bruce.
It's been my pleasure.